The People's Epic!
Okay. You know that dogs apparently yawn when they're stressed?
Yeah.
Did we watch that together?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know how accurate that is. Also, I wonder...
Oh, no, it makes sense to me.
Who does the sign? I mean, I guess humans sort of yawn too when their body is
overstimulated and they're tired. Yeah.
But we can't equate human, what's the word I'm looking for, human functions to compare it to dogs. But I guess if that is the basis of, like, if that is the foundation of how we compare our outside world, I know we're going on a philosophical rabbit hole, but.
Between the different ways that animals experience how we
attribute our human.
Mannerisms and reactions.
And reaction to dogs and cats and other animals. How we anthropomorphize things.
Right.
I mean, is he yawning just because he's tired? Not that he's stressed necessarily, but just because he's tired. Or he's bored. People yawn when they're bored too.
They do, but because that fact that dogs yawn when they're stressed comes from scientists who've done research on it, I'm going to believe that it's true.
But why?
I don't know. Why? I mean, like, yawning is like a sign of, like, you need to, like, take a deep breath and you need to, like, oxygenate. So when they're, overstimulated, mm-hmm. if they're just trying to, like,
just get some air into their brain.
Down, yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Yes, Charlie, Cora's in here. Charlie is currently trying to catch Cora, and Cora is too fast.
But she's going to make an appearance on this show, I'm sure,
come
here in the next few minutes or so.
Come here. Can I say hi?
It's okay.
Yeah, come here. Yeah, come here.
Check your laptop's in your lap. I can't do it.
Okay.
All that to say, I think it's fascinating how people do sciences on animals, like, mm-hmm. you know, Kirsten being, hey, monkey.
Hey, monkey.
Yeah. Say thank you. Welcome to back to season 3. Welcome to the People's Epic.
This is season 3 of Cora's show.
Yeah. I'm sure some of you remember Cora from our past few seasons. She will continually make appearances on this show till the end of time.
She thinks that for the rest of the season, we should just talk about famous cats.
Yeah. I mean, we did last year with Roommate.
Yep.
Oh, by the way, hey guys, welcome back. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, welcome back, adventurers.
Yeah. Welcome back to the now formed People's Epic. Thanks for tuning in to our shenanigans. We started our third season with our first episode last week with Bass Reeves.
And such a cool guy.
Yeah, what a cool guy.
Yeah.
Definitely somebody I would love to have meet. I think he was a Cancer, I'm not mistaken, via his birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Allegedly.
What did you learn? What's sitting with you from Bass Reeves' episode still?
I mean, just how cool he was. Like, the cool factor from this guy. Like, not only was he suave, he had great manners, a sense of humor. He rode a white stallion, carried two pistols, and was a hell of a shot.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't get cooler than that in the West. And he was a black man who was hunting all of these people down.
Yeah.
And was very, very successful at his job.
Yeah.
He knew what he was fucking doing.
Quintessential badass cowboy.
Yeah.
But like the good cowboy, you know, like
totally.
the prince cowboy that was like, the lawman cowboy.
Like, if he didn't actually exist, it would be, we had mentioned it in the episode, but it would be one of those like folklore things that come out of the West, you know?
Yeah.
Where it's like these people seem larger than life, but they actually existed, you know? Bass Reeves is definitely up there with one of those guys.
For sure.
Before we jump in today, we want to say I hope you guys had a good Valentine's Day.
Yeah, we're engaged now, in case we didn't mention that.
Yeah, if you didn't hear that on the first episode, we're engaged to be married. Fun fact there. It did not happen on Valentine's Day. It happened last Christmas around. Mm-hmm. But I hope you guys enjoyed Valentine's Day. And if you're not booed up, that's fine too.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it, man.
Galentine's. Oh my gosh,
Galentine's
please.
Is great.
Celebrate your friends. Celebrate the love that you have in your life.
There needs to be a guy Valentine's thing too.
Guyvin's Day?
Guyvantine.
Guyvantine.
Because Galentine, right?
Yeah,
for the gals.
Yeah.
Guyentine.
Guyentine.
Guyentine's Day.
Where the guys get together and celebrate each other.
Right.
I love that.
Get together with your bros and hang out. Maybe, you know, in numbers, you might be able to go out and find beautiful women on their Galentine's Day.
Sure.
And you guys can combine your parties and it'll turn into a hell of a Valentine's Day.
Yeah. I think there's also just like, there's so many amazing relationships that we have in our lives, and to honor them around the Day of Love sounds great, especially because that Day of Love to me is so funny because it was created on the day of a massacre. But anyway, I side note.
Yeah, I mean, but the thing is too, it's like Valentine's Day, just like most holidays, have become corporatized, and like, and I hate that people always feel like they're missing out on something on Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, the essence of Valentine's Day should be self-love, because you can't love another unless you love yourself.
100%. Absolutely. Celebrate yourself. Give yourself some love this holiday season.
Yeah, dude.
It's cold outside.
Buy yourself chocolates.
Buy yourself some fucking
Make yourself
chocolates.
A romantic dinner.
Yes. Throw down rose petals for your own damn self.
That's right.
Amen.
Amen. To happy Guyentines and Galentine's Day. And Valentine's Day.
Yes.
Anyways, before we jump in today, Hannah's going to be taking over this episode.
I'm so excited.
So like before, like during the Adventures of, we would flip back and forth between who we're talking about. So she takes one, I take one, blah, 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 blah. And then every fourth episode or so, we're throwing in an interview. Mm-hmm. So if you would like to be interviewed on this show, please email us at thepeoplesepic@gmail.com. Yeah, so as of today that we're recording, it's President's Day. But Hannah, go ahead and take it away. Well, who are we talking about today? You want to tee us up?
Why don't you tell us a trivia question first?
Oh, right. Jesus,
dude. I need
dude.
To know.
I totally forgot the trivia question. So the trivia question at the end of the Bass Reeves episode, I got carried away by the Guyentines Day.
Sure.
The trivia question at the end of the Bass Reeves episode was, what was the biggest cowboy heist in the history of the Wild West?
And I guessed something to do with Billy the Kid.
Correct. And although that, I'm sure he did at some point, I did see a weird re-rendering picture of Billy the Kid, like a colored picture. You know how they do those now where you can, anyways. It was not Billy the Kid.
Oh, so I wasn't correct.
Correct. Correct, you were not correct.
Okay.
The biggest cowboy heist in the history of the Wild West was the Big Springs robbery, led by Sam Bass, not related to Bass Reeves.
Okay.
I guess Bass was a popular name back then. He and six other cowboys, the Black Hills Bandits, intercepted a Union Pacific train near Big Springs, Nebraska, that was headed from San Francisco. Mm-hmm. The train was carrying a hoard of gold worth, at the time, $60,000. Mm. Today, that's worth nearly $1.7 million as of 2023.
Wow.
Sam and one other bandit were able to escape the law.
Wow.
But the funny thing was about Sam Bass was that he sort of turned into a Robin Hood. He would overpay for things with giant gold pieces. He just kind of gave back. He didn't really want the money because it turns out he wanted the thrill. Sam Bass might be somebody we talk about later on on the show because he sort of became notorious in the West, especially after this massive heist. And that's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
They split it six ways between each of the bandits. But when they initially got to the train, they were thwarted by a lockbox, which was on a timer to open when they got to the station, which is very smart, by the way, how they deterred bandits from robbing. But right next to the safe that was on the timer, there were three crates that were filled with gold.
Mm.
Pretty wild story.
Yeah, $1.7 million as a robber in the Wild Wild West.
Dude.
Like, oh my gosh.
Heyday.
Yeah, hitting it big.
But the fact that it was just out in the open, like they didn't really, they thought to have a safe on the train, but they didn't think to put the gold somewhere else, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They fucked up. Anyways.
Sam Bass.
Yeah, so you have the adventurer today. You have the epic story that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to see who we dive into.
Yeah, me too. This is someone that I have respected and loved for a long time. And she came up the other day because I listened to another podcast talked about her. And I really wanted to lean into the epic people.
Love it.
You know, yes, we love our adventurers. And I can't wait to talk about some really cool adventurers this season that I have come across. But this woman's life was just epic.
Okay.
And will be epic forever because of the things that she did and the glass ceilings that she shattered.
Interesting. Well, I'm epic. I would like to think so. I want to specify too, like epic, there are various ways to live epically.
Absolutely.
Right? That's kind of the point of why we talk about this show. So
for
I'm
sure.
curious to know in what way this individual is epic.
Yeah. She was a congressperson. Yeah. She shattered a bunch of glass ceilings, did a lot of things that people before her hadn't done yet. And an educator. She lived in Brooklyn, New York.
Brooklyn.
Any inkling as to who this might be?
Maybe. Would I know this individual?
I don't know. I don't know if you've heard of her before. I don't think you have, but I don't know. Maybe.
Well, let's jump in.
Shirley Chisholm.
Shirley Chisholm.
Shirley Chisholm.
I've never heard that name before, but it's a very cool name.
Yay. Okay. I'm excited to introduce you to Shirley Chisholm. I was introduced to her several years ago. I will talk about how, but she is someone who is just, I think, in a lot of quiet and then not so quiet ways, questioned why things were the way they were and said, why not me?
Yeah.
She, in the face of like so many you can'ts, she said, why can't I?
Why can't I?
She was a lot of firsts, but she definitely won't be any lasts.
All right, let's hear it.
Born in Brooklyn, New York on November 30th, 1924, Chisholm was the oldest of four daughters to immigrant parents, Charles St. Hill, a factory worker from Guyana, and Ruby Seal St. Hill, a seamstress from Barbados. So the oldest child, I think, I can so see how like her being the oldest child.
You would start your first episode on a first child.
We love an oldest child who's also like, you know, I'm a Scorpio, but she's a Sagittarius. Like, oh, we love a strong woman.
Okay.
And yeah, she was such a badass. So anyway, so oldest of four girls, born to working class immigrant parents, growing up in a very working class neighborhood in Brooklyn during the Great Depression.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So born 1924.
Rough.
Yeah. Yeah. Her early experiences with poverty and discrimination fueled her determination to break down barriers and advocate for those who faced similar challenges. She graduated from Brooklyn Girls High in 1942. She attended Brooklyn College, where she got a bachelor's degree in sociology in 1946, and she won like a ton of prizes on the debate team. Oh. This woman...
Smart cookie.
Smart cookie and knew how to argue, which I definitely respect. Well, I was
like, knew how to... Debate.
Debate.
Argue and debate. Yeah, two different things.
I agree. Thank you. Yes. Knew how to debate for sure.
Or to make a point.
To make a point, 100%. During her college years, she became very involved in campus activism and joined various social and political organizations. This early engagement set the stage for her to later really dive into social justice and community empowerment. She had several professors who really encouraged her to get into politics, but she herself at the time pointed out that her double handicap as a black woman in society at the time. She didn't even truly believe in herself yet.
Interesting.
After
She had enough confidence though to like carry herself in a way still though, like in debates and things like that. So, I mean, she had some inner reservoir of power that she knew she had.
For sure. She had definitely had a lot of confidence, definitely had inner reservoir of power. But I think it was important to me to point this out and also really enlightening when I read that I think that you grow into your confidence and into your chutzpah to say, why not me?
True.
After a time. You know, yeah. I think people, the idea that we're sort of like born with the audacity is not always the case.
Yeah.
We get to a certain point in our lives where we're like, no, like, I don't care that I am a black woman and that it's never been done before. I'm going to do it because someone needs to do it. And I care about X, Y, and Z. And no one else seems to be caring about X, Y, and Z. So I'm going to go lead the charge.
Totally. Yeah.
So just at the time in school, even though she was pushed in that direction, she wasn't there yet.
Yeah.
After she graduated, she pursued a career in education. She became a nursery school teacher after college. Humble beginnings. And eventually served as the director of a daycare center.
Very cool.
In 1949, she married Conrad Q. Chisholm, a private investigator, thus getting her last name of Shirley Chisholm. She was also going back to school at the time, and she got a master's degree from Columbia University in early childhood education. By 1960, she was working as a consultant to the New York City Division of Daycare. So, like, she was definitely...
Already making moves,
inching her way to the top of like leadership and like societal advancement, things like that.
Nice.
Her experiences in these roles deepened her understanding of those educational inequalities that were happening and were faced by minority children. And that really was like the spark for her. Really getting sick and tired of seeing minority children treated differently, wanting to advocate for improved educational opportunities. Yeah. That was really what, like, kind of to what I was saying earlier. She was like, I got to do something.
Well, it seems to at that time, like early childhood education was virtually non-existent. Like it almost like, I mean, it was there.
It existed,
for sure.
But it was not, not equal.
Kids
and
were
it was,
working and kids were, you know, I feel like they were building things and, you know, like.
Yeah, this was the 50s. So I'm sure there was a lot of child labor laws that were still being broken. But I think it was starting to get better.
Yeah, totally.
And starting to get better because of women like her. I mean, men and women like her.
Yeah.
She joined local chapters of the League of Women Voters, the NAACP, the Urban League, as well as the Democratic Party Club in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. So while she hadn't actually made it into politics yet, she started getting into those activist groups, mm-hmm. which I always think is like, there's so much energy in those rooms
totally.
That you just probably eventually are like, oh my gosh, yeah, let's...
Yeah, fired up for the cause.
So fired up. So in 1964, Shirley Chisholm made history by winning a seat in the New York State Legislature, becoming the second African-American woman to serve in the state assembly. Her political ascent continued when she was then elected to the United States House of Representatives in 1968, representing New York's 12th congressional district. They called her Fighting Shirley.
Fighting Shirley.
She introduced more than 50 pieces of legislation and championed racial and gender equality, fighting for the poor, and ending Vietnam. She was the first African-American woman in either chamber of Congress.
Wow. Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have not heard about this individual. But specifically for New York or like the federal government? Like she was...
Yeah federal like government. She government. Was in the 12th congressional... Oh, sorry. She was in the United States House of Representatives as of 1968, representing New York's 12th congressional district.
You know, this is actually starting to make... The name now is starting to... come up in the recesses of my brain.
You might have seen this picture of her before. I just love her like very 50s.
No, but she's adorable.
Isn't she so cute?
I love her.
I know. She's so adorable. But she like, I say adorable because she kind of has like very refined features and very bright eyes. But, and she, you know, kind of like narrow shoulders, but like she had so much power.
Yeah.
She was known for making really great speeches. She was definitely like a very good conversationalist. One of my favorite quotes of hers, and this is what I laughed at earlier when I was doing my research that I thought you would appreciate.
Okay.
Because I think this just, it resonates with both you and me and things that we think about, but also like how she was like, let's just be the first. She is quoted saying, be as bold as the first man or woman to ever eat an oyster.
Yeah, I do. I do love that. Yeah. Because it does take some gall. Yeah.
Who would think to themselves, oh, you know what? I'm going to sip out of this little rock with the little squishy stuff on the inside.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good point. I do think about that often. The first person to have tried anything.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, she makes a very great point. I do love that. I love that a lot. Because, yeah, somebody had to have the courage to open up a rock, like you said, to open up a rock and eat this slimy, slippery thing out of this rock from the ocean.
That takes a lot of boldness.
Yeah, totally.
Be like, eh, I'll be the first.
But I do love how playful that is, too.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't feel, it's not, it doesn't have to be grandiose necessarily, the things that you want to get across. And I love that, how simple that message is, but how very clear it is.
I think it, and we'll get more into this, but I think that it, that quote to me shows, to your point, how playful she was.
Yeah.
And how she believed in fighting for something, but she didn't do it in a way that was like, and nothing that I saw or read was like really grandiose in the way that she thought about the actions that she took. She was just like, I'm going to be as bold as this like crazy thought and be like, why not me? But she was so focused on the work. She was so focused on like just making the world a better place. It wasn't a self-aggrandizing.
Totally.
It wasn't, we have to change these things because you're bad and you're bad. It's just, let's just change them. Like, let's like face the inequality that we have before us and just do something really good about it.
Let's put rubber to the pavement. We need to, instead of talking about it, let's be about it.
Yeah, absolutely. As a congresswoman, Chisholm focused on issues such as education, social welfare, and minority rights. She co-founded the Congressional Black Caucus in 1969. Providing a platform for Black legislatures to address social issues affecting African-American communities. She also co-founded the National Women's Political Caucus in 1971. So she's very much so about getting people together mm-hmm. to really affect change.
Yeah.
Forming organizations. A lot of these organizations still exist today that can bring people together to, yeah, make the world a better place.
Nice.
In 1972, and this is the big one.
Okay.
This is the reason why I had heard of her and the reason why everyone should know who Shirley Chisholm is. Shirley Chisholm ran for president of the United States.
What?
Yes.
Against who? Ronald Reagan?
This would have been...
Nixon, maybe?
This would have been the election that Nixon won.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, McGovern and Nixon.
Okay.
So she ran for president in 1972. Would have been, if she had gotten the party's nomination, would have been against Nixon.
Atta girl.
Yeah, because she ran for the Democrats. So yeah. Yeah, exactly. Wow.
That's crazy, man.
Chisholm became the first African-American to run for a major party's nomination for president of the United States.
How about it?
Also making her the first woman ever to run for the Democratic Party's presidential nomination.
Get after it, Shirley.
Right?
That's cool.
Yeah. She was like, why not me? And like, these things need to happen. I can do it. Let's freaking go.
Yeah.
It was a landmark moment in American politics. She had so much resistance to her run.
Sure.
She faced so much racism and sexism, but she campaigned vigorously. She was out there. She was like meeting people all over and doing as many public appearances as she could. However, she was blocked from participating in any televised primary debates.
What?
And took legal action so that she could actually be a part of the debates.
Yeah.
And was permitted to make one speech.
During the whole debate?
During the entire campaign.
How is that possible?
So she went to go meet people. Uh-huh. She went to go and gather groups, but an official speech, televised official speech, when she took legal action because she wasn't allowed to join the debates, they said, you cannot join the debates, but you can make one speech. How patronizing is that?
Yeah, and who was in charge of that? I mean, I guess the media, because they're the ones that
there's
have
a legal
the power.
Body. There's a legal body that oversees elections, like national elections.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And they told her to butt out.
Yeah.
That's so fucked.
Yeah.
That's so fucked.
Yeah.
I wonder too that, I mean, they had to have been scared of her.
Yeah, for
they
sure.
They had to have been scared of her.
For sure. She was very eloquent.
Well, and we saw what happened to Nixon, right? So.
Right.
I mean, somebody fucked up somewhere hardcore.
Oh my God. Can you imagine if a black woman won in 1972, the difference our country would be? Dude.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
man.
I don't know. To be perfectly honest, the U.S. might have been in shambles even earlier. And not that it wasn't in shambles in 1972 when Nixon won to begin with. It's just, it's a lot, but...
I mean, when the pendulum swings, we know it definitely swings the other way really hard. We know from recent memory.
Well, right now it does, but there was a time when it didn't.
Well, I mean, but that's like a proven fact that like any time like it swings in one direction, let's say it swings in a Republican direction, like usually enough people, it swings back in the Democratic direction and then
right.
extremes. But anyway, like in this circumstance, it was really terrible what they.
Yeah, that sucks. They stifled her. They censored her.
Totally censored her. But no matter that had actually happened, she still was on a campaign trail. She still went and like had events and like raised money. So students, women, minorities followed what they called the Chisholm Trail.
Mm.
And she entered 12 primaries and garnered 152 of delegate votes. So she got 10% of the party nomination votes to run for the Democratic Party.
Okay. If she had more of a stage, definitely would have gotten more votes.
If she had more of a stage and if she had also been backed by the congressional... Black caucus.
Mm.
So unfortunately, and the thing that really frustrated me, and again, it's like, you got to look at the fact that she is both a woman and a black person, that despite she was not financed enough, and there was a lot of contentiousness from the predominantly male Democratic black caucus.
Mm.
So like, reading all of that and learning this, like, that sucks so hard. Like,
yeah,
you
man.
Would figure that like other black people would support this black woman, but just because she's a woman,
mm-hmm.
they're going to push back against it. So it just.
Yeah, that's really fucked. I mean, I guess the professors from earlier that you had mentioned said, I mean, they called it. They were like,
she had said it.
Oh,
that she
said
had
that.
The double, what was
double,
the, double handicap.
Yeah.
She had even said, I have a double handicap, not only for being black, but for being a woman. Mm. And in this circumstance, like, that just came into play. And I read that and my heart just like broke. I was just like, man, like that just sucks. Like,
well, because the next person to run that was black, I think it was Reverend Jesse Jackson, right? Or like, I guess the prominent person that had run. I know he wasn't the first black male to run for president, but I think he was the next black person to run for president. Yeah, so Reverend Jesse Jackson ran in 1984.
Okay.
After Shirley Chisholm.
Yeah, that would line up. So yeah, I just find that so frustrating. But ultimately, her bid for the Democratic nomination did challenge the prevailing notions of who could aspire to that highest office. And while she didn't secure the nomination, her groundbreaking candidacy did definitely pave the way for future generations of both women's and minorities.
Yeah, that's wildly impressive, man.
Yeah, she was brave. She was a brave human and just so before her time and so awesome.
We can get more into this later, but it's so baffling, man, that like either they were too scared to like have her in the debates because they knew what kind of power she had, which is more than likely the case. But also it's like, why would you not? This is one thing I never understood about the United States. It's like we're so forward on like power and representation and freedom of speech and yada, yada, yada. But we work so fucking hard to stifle people all the time on a regular basis.
I know.
Well, and it's like, what is everybody arguing about the amendments for when you're not letting people use them? You know?
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, yes, our country was founded on the idea that you can be who you want to be and make a life for yourself. The big caveat to that, and this is the thing that I think broke so many of our hearts when you sort of like get into the real world and see how the real world works, is like for a certain group of people. It was founded for a certain group of people to to do that. And now, and in the last couple hundred years, like people will point that out. And especially now we are pointing that out, that there are inequalities and inequities to that within that statement, within that quote unquote belief system. Mm-hmm. That we have to call out and change, because we all do deserve that. We all do deserve a fair shot at whatever position we want to fight for.
Right.
And so it takes people like her to just at least be the first person to say, I can walk into that room.
Yeah, to move the needle forward.
For sure.
Boy, did she. That's so cool.
She totally did. She was still in the political game, though, after she ran for her presidency. In 1977, she became the first black woman and second woman ever to serve on the very powerful House Rules Committee. That year, she also separated from her husband, Conrad Chisholm. But the same year, she got remarried to Arthur Hardwick Jr., a New York State legislature. Pretty quick turnaround, but hey, we all need good love.
I mean, you know, if it was in her, sure, why not? I mean, she had been married to Conrad for quite a while, I think, right?
They would have been married, yeah. Let's see. About 22 years, I believe, or 20.
Yeah.
5 years.
A long time.
Yeah, so they've been together for a while.
She knew what she wanted.
But she knew what she wanted, I guess. So, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, Conrad.
Hello, Arthur. I hope he is well. Chisholm retired from Congress in 1983. But beyond her political achievements and glass ceilings that she frickin' shattered, Chisholm was also a very prolific author. Her autobiography, Unbought and Unbossed, was published in 1970 and provided a candid account of her life and political career. The title was meant to encapsulate her commitment to maintaining independence and resisting external pressures.
Damn.
Unbought and Unbossed.
That's a great name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it was very clear that she, carved her own path. It's very admirable, especially at that time. I mean, shit, to what we've been saying, being black and a woman, especially in 1972, a card full of white men, I'm sure.
And you think about like there was so much going on in the 70s, but there was also like the feminist movement was happening in the 70s, which was amazing. And the feminist movement is incredible. However, the feminist movement of the 70s has been criticized for being predominantly white and not being extremely supportive of black women and women of color.
Yeah. And that's a whole nother podcast too. We could,
for sure.
That's a part two for sure. But
yeah, so she's existing in this, you know, ocean of different versions of progress.
Yeah.
that are somehow competing against each other, which is also frustrating. But she fought for her own place.
Yeah.
After leaving Congress, Chisholm continued to make an impact in academia. She taught at institutions like Mount Holyoke College and co-founded the National Political Congress of Black Women. She also continued to mentor young politicians, particularly women and people of color. In 1991, she moved to Florida and later declined the nomination of becoming U.S. ambassador to Jamaica due to her ill health. She died January 1st, 2005, Ormond Beach, Florida. Of her legacy, Chisholm said, "I want to be remembered as a woman who dared to be a catalyst of change."
Mm. Well, she was, for sure.
She absolutely was.
Now, for sure. I wish I had heard about her.
Yeah.
Like, why we're talking about her now. It's like, the name sounds familiar, but I remember talking about Reverend Jesse Jackson in history class, but why did we not talk about Shirley? You know,
because of that second handicap, you know what I mean? It's like, totally. It's that terrible, like, I mean, I'm going to bring it up again, but if you haven't seen the movie Origin, it's really good, but there's a caste system and like we create these ridiculous hierarchies that like, and then black women are somehow next down on the totem pole or something from black men. It's so messed up and it's so incorrect. It is a story that has been taught to us and we can unteach it.
Yeah.
And Shirley challenged that. Totally. She absolutely did. She was resilient. She was tenacious. And she was very committed to justice and social justice and equality. Her legacy absolutely is a beacon of hope and a reminder of the ongoing struggle for a more equitable and representative democracy. I learned about Shirley for the first time when I went to the Women's March on Washington on January 21st, 2017, which will forever be one of the coolest days of my life. I got to march with 450,000 people, and I mean, mostly women, also men, and it was just a day of so much love.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, usually when you're around that big group of crowds of people, especially now post-pandemic, it's terrifying, but I just remember I felt so safe.
A lot of energy there.
A lot of energy, a lot of chutzpah, a lot of joy, and there were so many pictures of Shirley Chisholm, and I was like, who is this? And I was asking people around me, and they told me who she was. Dozens of women carrying pictures of Shirley, chanting quotes of hers that, like, I mean, she is definitely remembered as a catalyst of change. One of my favorite quotes of hers that I remember seeing this one sign that was her picture and this quote, "If they don't give you a seat at the table, bring a folding chair." Is scrappy and like, it's, I'm showing up for the right reason and I'm going to make myself a seat at that table. And I just, that is so good.
Yeah.
That is so well said.
She did too.
Yeah,
boy, did she.
Shirley Chisholm.
Shirley Chisholm. What a great name.
Mm-hmm.
What a great story.
Mm-hmm.
Love the quote about the oyster.
I know.
Could you say that again?
Yeah. Be as bold as the first man or woman to eat an oyster.
Yeah. That's so good.
Like a little bold, little crazy.
Yeah, a little bold, little crazy. I mean, but that's what it takes sometimes.
But people only think you're crazy at the time until it's not crazy anymore.
Totally, dude.
You know, people only think it's a wild idea for a black woman to be president until it's not.
Yeah.
A wild idea.
Absolutely.
At all. And we're so close. But yeah, like.
Ugh. It's so interesting. I was watching this video the other day. This is kind of a sidebar, not necessarily related to Shirley, but. There was a video of this, he's like a workout guy. Mm. Like he's big on TikTok and yada, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
But he was telling this story about how when he was working in the gym, when he'd work out, he basically stayed at the gym. He was allowed to sleep at the gym.
Mm.
And everybody would come in and they'd know him and like, you know, be like, "Hey man, how's it going? Hope you like keep chasing your dream." He wanted to like own a gym, wanted to have his own thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Carve his own path.
Mm-hmm.
He finally did that. He bought the gym that he had slept in for well over a year. He hired employees. He had his own manager. Like he was like, he made his living as like this dude who worked himself up to own his own gym.
Nice.
And then when he got to the top, everybody was trying to bring him back down. He's like, "Oh, you're boss man now," you know, like trying to like throw in these like side comments. It's like the same people that were cheering him on also pulled them back down. And I wonder, bringing this back to Shirley, if that is sort of what happened. It's like the same people sometimes that embolden you to go after the things you want will also bring you back down.
Yeah, no, you bring up a really great point. And like, it is something to think about when applying it to her life, because there were so many people around her and in her sphere who were rooting for her. And I'm sure that like for example, the members of like the predominantly male Black caucus, like I'm sure they were rooting for her. But then it's like once you go one step, quote unquote, too far or right. one step beyond what they think you deserve in right. some weird way, then you're the enemy. Then you need to be quieted. You need to be put back in a corner. Mm-hmm. And that is just so messed up. It is such a display of control yeah. and abuse of power yeah. Rather than like, let's lift each other up. Like a rising tide raises all ships.
Yeah.
And
I think it's yeah. still happening, unfortunately. I don't know if that yeah. part of the human psyche will ever change.
It probably honest. Comes from some sort of like base level, you know, monkey brain to like, you know, say that you don't deserve more than me kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's why yeah. people would raid and pillage all the time. You know, yeah. it's like they have more resources than we do. Let's go steal their shit. You know, it's yeah. like it at the baseline, it's very much that.
Yeah.
But not to take away from Shirley.
But though. back to Shirley. Like, I think she did such an amazing job of making such a name for herself in a time where, like, again, like she was the first in so many rooms,
yeah.
but she will not be the last.
Totally.
But because she walked into those rooms, because she said, I could,
pulled up
other
a chair.
People were like, yeah, I can too.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there's so many people throughout history that we've talked about, like her, that while maybe they didn't hit the big true north that they mm-hmm. had in their head, mm-hmm. they pushed the bounds, the understanding of how far you could go just a little farther.
Totally.
They pushed that needle just a little farther, and that is just as worthy of celebration
100%
as reaching the mountaintop.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Just yeah. moving it, the little things, man. Just yeah. moving it even a little bit, though she moved it a lot.
She did. She really did.
Impressive.
She did. She was amazing. A couple other quotes of hers that I really love. Tremendous amounts of talent are lost to our society because that talent wears a skirt.
Mm-hmm.
And then another one, we must reject not only the stereotypes that others hold of us, but also the stereotypes that we hold of ourselves.
Yeah, that one resonates for sure.
If you have self-limiting beliefs, yeah. you will be limited.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure.
Yeah, I just think she was so intelligent. She was so smart. She was so powerful and resilient in the face of so much adversity. And I just have such love and respect for her. She honestly would be one of the people that if I could say, you know, who could I sit at a dinner table with that isn't with us anymore? Mm-hmm. I would love to sit and talk to her.
Well, why don't you save that for the season 3 recap?
And okay.
We'll come back to that.
All right, so I've got two questions for you. So what are you taking away from Shirley Chisholm? What did she teach you?
Being bold enough to bring a seat to the table.
Yeah.
You know? Because it takes so much gall and it takes so much bravery and maybe even a little crazy. Because you have to have that confidence to be like, yeah, why not me? Mm-hmm. To what you were saying, why not me? Because... Mm-hmm. You know, I know I have a hard time on a regular basis fighting for myself, like what I think I deserve. And I think she's a great example of not being afraid to ask for what you deserve. Because, I mean, the worst that they'll do, maybe on a small scale, is tell you no.
I think for her, I would totally agree with you. And I think for her, she also had a level of danger. Again, being a Black woman.
Oh, totally.
In that society,
yeah. Yeah. I don't want to diminish that at all.
Yeah.
Sure.
And I know you aren't, but I agree with you there that like, it's so inspirational.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's definitely what I'm taking away from this is carving your own path. And yeah, her quote about bringing a fold out chair to the table. It's like, yeah, you have every right to be there. And more than like you should be more than welcome to fucking bring your own seat, man.
Mm-hmm. And then people will learn. And unfortunately, this is just sort of the way it is sometimes. But then people will learn that you include a seat for Shirley.
Yeah,
Shirley deserves a throne.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the second question: what was Shirley Chisholm's true north?
Moving the needle forward, being an example. Yeah, fighting for what she thought she deserved. And then by proxy, showing other people that they can do the same.
Mm-hmm.
Again, just being an example. I think her true north was being a great example.
Her focus, from what I was reading about her, was social equality and fighting for minorities and fighting for the poor. I think the example that she became was sort of, it just happened. It was sort of secondary because she was focused on the fight and she knew she had to fight it.
And she fought. For sure.
She did. Shirley, to you, incredible, badass, resilient, powerful, smart black woman of the 1970s and before and after. Here's to you.
Here's to you. Cheers.
Cheers.
What a cool individual, Shirley Chisholm.
A social justice
warrior.
And
she's so cute.
I know. Like such her a picture. Cute, such like, a cute social justice warrior.
I know that's not, but maybe not fair to call her because she was more than cute. But she looks like, I just want to squeeze her.
I do. I kind of want to give her a hug.
Yeah.
Well, she's got like, if you look up a picture of her, she's got like the very kind of typical 1950s
bobbed
vibe.
Hair and,
yeah. But she just looks like such a sweet person. And
she looks spunky.
She does look spunky. Yeah. Like I could totally approach her kind of thing.
Well, that was maybe part of her
yeah, appeal.
Yeah.
Very approachable.
She's very disarming.
Mm-hmm. How about a trivia question?
Let's hear it.
Who was the first woman to be elected to the House of Representatives?
Great question. Can I guess a timeline?
Sure. Yeah. You want to guess a year?
1930s.
Okay.
Am I in the ballpark?
Ish.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's fair. Yeah. We'll find out next time.
We'll find out next time.
Well, thanks again, guys, for joining us. And what a great episode, Hannah.
Thanks.
Yeah. We're going to keep rolling with this thing. Just to give a little preview for the next episode, we're not talking about a person. Talking about a thing. Another addition to our season this year is we're going to be talking about other stuff, as we had mentioned in the previous episode.
Mm-hmm. We're opening ourselves up to new adventures.
Yeah, new adventures, new things, and just trying to celebrate all that is human and not so. But we hope you guys are enjoying the season so far. I know we're only on the second episode, but it feels good. And I'm sorry, I'll go ahead and apologize if I sound all over the place. I think with the new energy of this show, we're trying to like keep some things, trying to move some things around, and I think we're navigating it right now as best as we can.
I think you're doing a great job, baby.
Thanks, you too. If you have any comments, questions, concerns, please email us at thepeoplesepic@gmail.com. Give us a follow on our Instagram at thepeoplesepic.
If you have any, you want to point us in the direction of affordable wedding venues here in
sure,
Atlanta.
Sure, yeah. Let us know if you got any insights there. We found a few so far that we're liking. So we're still digging there. But yeah, until next time, guys, here's to your true north.
Thank you.
Bye.